From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of February 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And a bit later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company, out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the CME Group is establishing a $100 million Family Farm Protection Fund. An official from the Department of Labor has defended his agency's update of child labor rules, and the U.S. Congress has taken up new rules banning its members from trading information learned as a result of their legislative positions. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly, and then we'll hear from U of I ag economist Darrell Good. He has some ideas about the weather patterns and how two poor crop years in the Midwest may or may not correlate to a potential third disaster. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day with the soft red winter wheat lower. Nearby contract down 2 cents in the March at 660 3/4, the May at 674, down 4, July 689, 2 3/4 lower, and December futures at 723 1/4, down 1.5 cents. The hard red in Kansas City, July down 4 cents at 729 1/2. Back in the corn pit from Chicago, 644 1/2. The lead option March settled 1.5 cents higher. May futures at 650 3/4, up 1 1/4. July corn at 655 1/2, up 2. September 604 3/4, up 3 1/4. And December futures, $5.81 1/2 a bushel, 2 1/2 higher. The March contract of next year, $5.93 1/4, 2013, up 2 1/4 for March corn. March soybean futures, $12.32 1/2, 15 1/2 higher. May at 1240 3/4, up 15 1/4. July 1250 1/4, 15 1/4 higher. And the August at 1248, up 15 1/4. November beans, $12.37 1/4, 13 1/2 cents higher for the day. Bean meal at 328.60, up 5.20 on the day. Bean oil at 51.65, 46 higher for the afternoon. The live cattle futures finished the nearby contract at 123.62 1/2, down $1.52 1/2. April at 127.40, down $1.40, and the March feeders at 154.45, 92 1/2 lower. Lean hogs for the day in the February at 87.52 1/2, a nickel lower, and the April futures at 88.92 1/2, down 82 1/2. From the outside markets, live crude oil futures at $97.52 a barrel, $1.16 higher. Ethanol at 2.13 1/10, that's down 1 1/2. Natural gas at 4 7/10 lower, down 2.50, or rather at $2.50 3/4 cents, and 6 1/10 cents, that is. And the heating oil at $3.11 2/10 cents, up 5 9/10 cents. Gold futures on the day at $1,737.90 an ounce, down $18.90, and the dollar 78.92. That's down 0.06. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Occasional rain, a low of 38 degrees with an east-northeast wind at 9 to 15, gusting to 23. The chance of precipitation tonight set at 80%. Saturday, occasional rain, a high of 43 with an east wind at 13 to 18, gusting to 24, and 80% chance of precipitation again tomorrow. And Saturday evening, a 30% chance of rain, that happening before midnight. Cloudy, gradually becoming partly cloudy with a low of 34 degrees. East-northeast winds at 9 to 11. Sunday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 43. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 28. Mostly sunny on Monday with a high of 44 degrees. And Monday night, clear with a low of 27. By the time we get to Tuesday, we should see sunny skies in the 41 degrees. Tuesday night, cloudy and 26. Wednesday, partly sunny and 40. Wednesday night, partly cloudy and 28. And on Thursday of next week, mostly sunny skies and a high near 42 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast. When we get to the bottom of the half hour, we'll talk with Jim Angel. He's at the Illinois State Water Survey and the Prairie Research Institute.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Time now to check in on the agricultural futures markets for a Friday afternoon. On the phone line, Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Hi, Mike.
Hey there, Todd. Good to see you in Mahomet the other night.
Oh, yeah. It was great to be at the Farm Credit Services building there. It's nice to have you come. And I know you and Dave Dickey, and I think Kirk Kimmel is on that panel, along with Dan Zwicker, had a good time and a really good turnout. I didn't stay for the whole thing. Were you bearish or bullish?
Well, I think we were mixed. I think the short term, we were all three very friendly of the potential for upside, especially technically. And from my perspective on the outside markets, and today's data helped, kind of illuminate this, that the unemployment numbers came in at the best pace of in 9 months. And so we've dropped down to an 8.3% unemployment number. The Chinese stock market closed at the best level since early August of last year, back of the above the 20,750 mark in the Hang Seng. That's kind of a go-no-go gauge for me as far as how Asia and the financial world is doing over there. But these two things from a macro perspective and what Kurt and Dan were talking about from a technical perspective would say we've kind of got the stars lined up to be able to push higher. And now we wait for the USDA numbers to come out and see if that actually can happen or not.
I think from what Dave told me just before we went on the air this afternoon at this time, that when he summarized it, you were all feeling like we would move higher through the beginning of the planting season at least. And then we'd have to see what the weather did. But if we were in a normal growing season pattern, that it would move lower.
Yeah, I think we need to err on the side of caution when it comes to the demand side. And it's interesting because I looked up what price the November beans were at the end of November going back the last 7 years. And if you take out last year at the end of January, 2008 was the only year we were up at this level or higher. The rest of those years we were trading in the mid-fives, mid-sixes, some cases the mid-nines. But I think that's where we have been at elevated levels for quite some time, and we are still just limping along in China and in the EU. And that's where I think if we get safely planted, we have a good window of opportunity to get good acreage numbers in, and we have a good February base price. That's a big element here in the short term that will probably define how big of an acreage base we can gain. If we get those two things, it would make logical sense that the demand is fighting elevated price levels. Maybe the market, the futures market, will decide to take out a chunk of risk premium in order to hold on to that demand base. And that's where next week's USDA reports really come in, because we've got a real good chance between Mexico, Argentina, and even South Africa to a lesser degree to see some global ending stocks for corn and coarse grains to be dropped to a point maybe where we're down at 5-, 6-, 7-year lows in terms of ending stocks, not stocks to use, just pure ending stocks. So this is where hopefully that USDA report will set us up for a continuation in the month of February for higher prices. But again, the higher we go now, I think the more acres the producers will put in, and we want to kind of try and take advantage of that.
You have to balance that off between the fundamentals that are coming in. So how much of an impact do you suppose, and when will we really know, and maybe the USDA reports are part of this, what is being produced in South America?
We had that question asked in Mahomet. The contacts I have down there, because they're just now getting their second crop planted, they're telling me you're really not going to know, because the second crop is such a big percentage, you're really not going to know till May, June. But I do think in corn, Todd, because Argentina usually ships out 70-71% of their production in the export market, I think we could probably gain an idea of the trend of where we're heading. The ag attaché for Argentina came out late yesterday and put the crop at 21.6 million tons, I believe. And so we've got a mindset in the trade, I think, that it's going down. And how much USDA puts on the table next week, I think you can get an idea of how much our exports in corn may go up between now and the end of the marketing year. In other words, what I'm getting at is between the wheat weather and the southern plains getting this big blizzard and rain system coming through, and the fact that the Informa numbers today for beans were, I think, a little bit more bullish than the corn, I think there's plenty of premium in the beans already not enough premium in the corn if that USDA report gives us a decent export number for corn.
Yeah, tell me more about that 21.6 million metric tons out of Argentina. How's it compared to where we started with what we thought they would produce at the beginning of the season?
A great question. 26 to 27 is what the conventional wisdom was at the time that we came in to the crop year. Now, back in 07, Argentina did 22 million tons, so we may be as bad as 27. 2007, some of the traders and some of the analysts in South America are saying Argentine rainfall amounts are as bad as 2008, 2009. That was a year that Argentina only did 15.5 million tons of corn. So I think that's where it goes back to. Maybe we go from a 1.5, 1.6 billion bushel export number back up to a 2 billion bushel export number between now and the next 6 or 7 months as we finish out the marketing year, because we garner so much more potential exports from Argentina. Throw on top of that what's going on in the winter wheat belt over in Eastern Europe, and I think that's where I'm coming back to next week's report, may give the trade a glimmer that supplies are falling, and maybe rather dramatically. Here again, hopefully they price that in the short term, and here again, the higher we go now, the harder the demand is going to be able to sustain itself in the medium term, so take advantage of that rally.
Well, there's a lot of big ifs there. That would, if you were right and our export number were to jump, that would push corn dramatically higher, I would think. That would mean our ending stocks would be, well below the 650 level, which is, 5% stocks-to-use ratio, right?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get much below 700. I don't think USDA will allow it, and I don't think
they'll adjust.
Yeah, I think they take a staggered approach, or they will take a staggered approach. But what it means to me, and this goes back to the technicals and the fundamentals trying to blend them together, is when I closed out the week this week and I looked at the bean-corn ratio for new crop, no beans divided by Dease corn, It's presenting a potential sell signal there, and I'm really looking for that report next week to give us that sell signal fundamentally. And I'm not saying beans need to go down, but I'm saying beans need to go down in relation to new crop corn. And if I don't get a bullish report in corn and Dease corn goes down, then it's going to be really, really hard for beans to extend the gains that we saw this week.
Anything else I need to talk to you about before I let you go?
Middle East is heating up again, and I think it's just worth noting because we've got a lot more posturing going on here at the end of the week. And it was interesting because there's a pretty good article out of the Asia Times where one of the political scientists that I think highly of was talking about how, in essence, Iran has been planning for this type of confrontation with the United States and Israel since 1979. So I think between them firing off a missile, Panetta talking about Israel coming in, between now and spring, I think we need to keep an eye on that, because a supply shock like that would be a lot like the mid-70s. It wouldn't be bullish to the commodities, I don't think, because it would be a supply shock, not a demand shock. So we need to prepare for that in the short term as well.
I'm looking forward to having you on Commodity Week.
Me too. I'll look forward to it here in a little bit.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, and will be one of our guests on Commodity Week. Actually, this week we're just going with our panelists because we have a great panel set. Zwicker and Cooley and Zuzulo will all be on. We'll talk to them for the half hour. We'll post it up to our website at willag.org. That's willag.org by just about 6 o'clock this evening.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the closing market report on a Friday afternoon. Your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, is here now with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, the CME Group on Thursday announced it will establish a $100 million Family Farmer and Rancher Protection Fund, expected to be in effect by March 1st of this year. Farmers and ranchers using CME Group products will be eligible for up to $25,000 per account in the case of losses resulting from the insolvency of a clearing member or other market participant. CME Group is working on its definition of the specific eligibility requirements for family farmers and ranchers. A Department of Labor official defended the need to update child labor laws for farms in a subcommittee meeting of Agriculture, Energy, and Trade yesterday on Capitol Hill. Still, lawmakers criticized the proposal, with one congressman saying he would block any funding to implement it. Nancy LePink, Deputy Administrator for the Wage and Hour Division of the U.S. Department of Labor, testified that the proposed rule changes were meant to promote the viability of agriculture. Subcommittee Chairman Scott Timpton says the rule may have been well-intentioned, but should have never been proposed. After years of delay, Congress took a big step toward approving new rules to ban lawmakers from trading stocks based on information they pick up in the halls of Capitol Hill. The Senate voted yesterday 96-3 to pass the legislation called the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act. The bill now moves to the House, where Republican leaders say they will vote on it next week. Greece expects its 2011 budget deficit will be smaller than expected at between 9.1% and 9.4% of gross domestic product, thanks to an emergency property tax. The development could help Athens in its budget bailout talks with the European Union and the International Monetary Fund. DuPont executives yesterday announced a major expansion of the company's commitment to global food security. DuPont's new $10 billion initiative through 2020 will focus on items like improving nutrition, food shelf life, and reduced waste in global food production. The company expects to release 4,000 new products during the next 9 years, including drought-tolerant seed traits. Tyson Foods' quarterly profits blew past analysts' estimates as higher pork sales helped offset weak beef results. Tyson, the number one U.S. meat processor, said net income fell to $156 million, or 42 cents per share, in the fiscal first quarter ending December 31st, from $298 million, or 78 cents per share, a year earlier. Analysts, on average, were expecting 33 cents per share. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's Public Radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, that second program you can hear this evening after about 6 p.m. Central Time, posted to our website at WILLAG.org. While you're there, why don't you sign up for our free weekend newsletter? Hit subscribe over on the right-hand side of the page and check out all the things that are happening at our all-day Ag Outlook, too. That one's scheduled for the 6th day of March. That's the first Tuesday of next month. Now, up next, you know corn yields across the United States have been lower than average for the last couple of years. Most would suggest that might mean the odds are in favor of a normal growing season in 2012. The Ag Economist at Illinois took a look at the historical yields to see if there was any pattern that could be identified. We'll hear now from Illinois' Darrell Good about what he found.
We've had 2 years in a row now of below-trend yields on corn here in the U.S., and I guess the question we were posing is, does that have any implications for a likely yield in 2012? And so we just took a historical look at average yields since 1960 and the annual deviations from trend in each of those years to see if there was any pattern. And what you find are two or three things. About 60% of the time, the U.S. average yield has been above trend value. 40% of the time, we've been below trend. So if you just said starting from zero, if just saying what are the odds in 2012, history would say 60% likely you'll be above trend. It doesn't say anything about the magnitude of that deviation, but there is a slight probability favoring above trend yields. And what we're suggesting is that's because favorable weather is more common than adverse weather, so that you would expect more years at trend or above. But you would also expect that when you're below trend on average, that deviation will be larger than when you're above trend, because there's not a linear relationship between weather and yield. Poor weather is more harmful then good weather is helpful for yield. So that's kind of the starting point. And then we also said, well, while there's kind of a 60-40 probability above and below trend, have there been sequences of years or runs of years when we've been above or below trend for consecutive years? And we're particularly interested now, of course, in runs or sequences below trend yield. And when we look historically, prior to 2010-11, there were three other instances when we had 2 years of below trend yield, early 60s, mid-70s, and mid-90s. And in each of those instances, we did follow with a third year of below trend yield. And in one case, in the mid-70s, we also had a fourth consecutive year of below trend yield. So history, we only got three observations for over the last 52 years when we've had 2 years sequence below trend. But it is kind of eye-opening that in each of those cases, we had a third year below trend. What does that say about 2012? Maybe not a lot. But I think going into this year with the expectation that just because we've been below trend in the last 2 years, we won't be in 2012, this analysis would give us some pause in reaching that conclusion.
That was University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good discussing the possibilities of a third short crop year in the United States. You can find the details of the analysis on the FarmDoc website. The address is farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
This is willag.org, the closing market report. Have you gotten your tickets yet for our All-Dag Outlook meeting, the 6th day of March? That's the first Tuesday of the month. You can, 217-333-7300, just about 50 of those left as of a few minutes ago. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural cash grain market is Bruce Bostard now. He's at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Let's start with the Gulf and move our way back up the river. Basis there in New Orleans has been really interesting. Tell me what you think about it.
Sif corn was really interesting. We had somebody caught leaning the wrong way, I think, going into the crop report. So short January paper, short January barges out there. When you had the crop report come out, the board broke back, no cash grain moved, and this guy, he had sold barges and needed to cover them in, and there was some bleeding going on out there, probably led by the afloat barges and then straight January paper. Some pretty high numbers were trading out there. Now it looks like we've passed our peak, and that has been coming in for the last week or so. When you roll it back upriver, we saw higher numbers, of course, along the Illinois River. It pumped up the Peoria market. Barge freight got stemmy, led by the Illinois River, because that's where most of the corn was available to move at this type of year with the mid-mist frozen up. So the barge freight popped up. That also has been backing off some here the last week or so as the SIF's been easing off.
Well, that is an interesting story. Now tell me about your bids for the day.
Our basis is a little bit better. It rolled over into the CN corn market, but not to the extent that it did some other places. Nearby is up 3 cents for the week for February. We went from a 3 over to a 6 over. New crop is steady. Beans picked up a couple cents over the week from a 10 under or from a 12 under to a 10 under.
Bruce, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Goodbye to some of our radio stations now. For the rest of you, back in just a couple of minutes with Jim Angel and the weather forecast.
It's National Carrot Cake Day. Carrots have been used in sweet cakes since at least the medieval period, at which time sweeteners were relatively scarce. On this day in agricultural history in 1815, the world's first commercial cheese factory was established in Switzerland. By the way, today there are some 450 types of cheese available in Switzerland. In 1823, Spencer Fullerton Braid was born. An American naturalist and zoologist, he was the second secretary of the Smithsonian Institute. By the end of his tenure, the National Museum housed more than 2.5 million specimens and artifacts. In 1862, William Jackson Humphreys was born. An American atmospheric physicist, he applied basic physical laws to explain the optical, electrical, acoustical, and thermal properties of the atmosphere. In 1890, Christophorus Ballet died. A Dutch meteorologist, he is best known for his observation that wind blows at right angles to the atmospheric pressure gradient. And in 1913, the 16th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified. It gave Congress the power to levy taxes on income. In 1913, less than 1% of the population paid income tax at the rate of 1%. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey and the Prairie Research Institute is on the phone line with us. He serves as the state climatologist. Jim, when we spoke last week, January was closing the month out, and we would have thought maybe on Friday of last week that we'd been pretty close to getting things right. It was number 18 in rank of the warmest January's on record. It's moved up just a bit.
That's right, Todd. It's finished up being the 13th warmest January on record. We ended up being about 6.6 degrees above normal across the state. We certainly saw a lot of mild temperatures across Illinois. There's a lot of places reported, you know, highs in the 50s and 60s and maybe a few 70s there, and a few people playing golf. But yeah, very mild month as far as temperatures go. The precipitation, and that's precipitation is rainfall plus any melted snow, we were right about normal across the state. It was about, I think the overall average was 1.9 inches, which is right at normal. The wettest area was in the eastern part of the state. I've been driving around the last couple of weeks for meetings and seen a lot of water staining in the fields between Chicago and Robinson, Illinois. So there's definitely on the wet side in the eastern part of the state. A little drier in the western half of the state, I would say, probably around Quincy, maybe some of the drier areas. But, you know, in the wintertime, that's not such a bad thing. It really has no impact on the upcoming growing season at this point.
When you go back and look at history, any correlation between what the spring and summer brought and what the and a warmer than normal winter might have brought along with it, too?
Well, you know, what's interesting is there is at least a slight correlation between the summers and winters. When you have a really hot summer, it's typically followed by a cold winter and vice versa. So there's a little bit of that trade-off, kind of a balancing act. It really doesn't have to be that way, but it does just kind of work out statistically that sometimes we get that. We definitely saw that in the 1930s. We had some very cold winters there, and then we had some very hot summers, and then followed by mild winters. So we kind of go through this cycle. You know, where last year we had very cold and snowy winter and then the hot summer. So that seems to be kind of a pattern that does play out from time to time here in Illinois.
All right. Tell me about the forecast for the upcoming week.
Yes. If you look at the big news for us is rain over the weekend. There's a low-pressure system moving through the state on tonight and into tomorrow, and probably will end up moving out sometime early Sunday, and that's going to bring a fair amount of rain. It's probably the heaviest amounts will be in the southern part of the state, about 1 to 1.5 inches down there. In central Illinois, it'd be amounts of more like 3/4 of an inch to an inch. The temperatures will be mild enough that it'll fall as rain rather than snow. So highs will be in the 40s throughout the rest of the week and lows in the 30s and upper 20s.
Thanks so much, Jim.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel with the Illinois State Water Survey and the Prairie Research Institute. That wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for Stock and Commodity Reports on Illinois Public Media comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.